2. It was once said by the soothsinger Danael Arrigon, if a man sought proof that beauty could be born of atrocity, he need look no farther than Sul Adair. Built in the frozen heart of the Muat Mountains in East Sudeim, the city fort was a testament to both the ingenuity and cruelty of mortal men. It was said that Iskander IV, the last Shan of Sudeim, spent the lives of 10,000 chattels to build it. The dark ironstone that gave the chateau its name, Black Tower in the local tongue, was quarried almost 1,000 miles distant, and the route by which it was transported has forevermore been known as Nased Dahasat, the road of nameless graves. Sul Adair sat nestled in the Hawkspire Pass, safeguarding the gold glass mines at Lashame and Ra, the grand city port of Eshev. Those treasures were faded now, but Sul Adair remained, uncorrupted by the hand of fate or the teeth of time. And it was atop these frozen peaks that the Empress Mago Shastan had raised her throne. Jean-Francois strode the halls, footfalls echoing on high-flung ceilings. Meline had dressed him in his finest, a frock coat of white velvet, a mantle of pale hawk's feathers. The twin moons and wolves of the Blood Chastain were stitched at his breast, and the long hair his empress so adored flowed about his shoulders like molten gold. Meline walked 3 steps behind, as was proper for a thrall, the dark damask of her gown whispering. Servants glided the shadowed halls, falling to their knees at the sight of him. Animal familiars, cats and rats and ravens, watched his approach, slinking away as he drew near. He saw other kith, Medier and fledglings of Margot's Court of the Blood, bowing or curtsying as he passed. But the Marquis breezed by most with barely a glance, gaze fixed on the walls around him, the gables soaring overhead like the boughs of heaven. The chateau's interiors were decorated with the most breathtaking frescoes in all creation. The Grand Master Javion Sa Judael had toiled 30 years in the painting of them. It was said when the Grand Master received word of the birth of his first son, he did not even look up from his toil. When the Sudeimi warlord, Khusru the Fox, launched his ill-fated campaign to wrest the city back from Augustan control, Javion continued to paint, even as the armies of the Emperor and would-be Shan clashed upon the battlements. And when his beloved wife, Dalia, hurled herself from Suladair's highest tower in protest at his neglect, the Grand Master did not even take the time to attend her funeral rites. Jean-Francois admired the mortal's passion, but more what he'd created with it. A beauty that would endure long after its creator had fed the worms. The chateau was built in 5 magnificent tiers, and Javion had painted the walls of each level as a step on the ascension to heaven. The first level was dedicated to the natural realm and God's favoured children, humanity. The second was adorned with parables of the saints, the third a tribute to the 7 holy martyrs. Above them flew the angels of the heavenly host, Eloise, Manet, Raphael, even dear old Gabriel, spreading dove-white wings along the towering walls of Sul Adair's 4th tier. Jean-Francois climbed ever higher, Meline breathing soft behind him as finally they ascended the chateau's highest level. Here a grand hallway stretched before them, blood-red carpet swathing dark flagstones. Beautiful chandeliers adorned the rafters, like great spider webs of glittering gold glass, hung thick with the shadow of roosting bats. And upon the walls, where Javion Sa Judael had painted his decades-long homage to God Almighty, the Sovereign of Heaven himself, there was now only featureless black stone. The Grand Master's life work had been sanded completely bare, and replaced with dozens of paintings in golden frames. Different portraits of the same subject, over and over again. Striding past steel-clad thrall swords, Jean-Francois reached the tall doors to his dame's inner sanctum. And there, he stopped, studying the portrait above the entrance. She who had obliterated heaven and supplanted its rule on earth. "Enter," came the command. Thrall swords pushed open the mighty doors, unveiling the grand chamber beyond. Méliné stepped forward, speaking in a loud, clear voice. "The Marquis Jean-Francois of the Blood Chastain, historian of Her Grace, Margot Chastain, first and last of her name, undying empress of wolves and men." A road of deep red carpet stretched into the dark, flanked by tree-tall pillars. The Marquis felt a chill in the room, banishing the blood-warm passions of his bed. Entering alone, he followed the carpet, hands clasped like a penitent, accompanied by the bright song of a lone castrato somewhere in the shadows. With every step, that chill pressed harder on his skin, along with the swell of a dark, impossible power. A low warning growl rang out ahead. The Marquis stopped immediately and dropped into a bow, deep enough that his beautiful golden curls brushed the floor. "My Empress, you commanded my presence." "I did," came the reply, rich and earth deep. "Your word is my gospel, Your Grace. Look upon me, then, Marquis, and pray." Jean-Francois lifted his gaze. The carpet was a river of blood, flowing down from a magnificent throne. Four wolves, black and fierce, lounged on a dais about it. To one side, a page in Chastain livery knelt with palms upturned, holding a leather-bound tome almost as big as he. And behind the throne, 20 feet high, loomed another portrait of the priori of the Blood Chastain, the eldest of the line of the shepherd, dread sovereign of all her kin, the Empress Margot. It was not the best he'd painted. Jean-Francois had painted all the portraits in his keep. But it was Her Grace's favourite. Margot was depicted sitting upon a golden crescent, clad in a beautiful onyx gown. Twin wolves flanked her feet, twin moons kissed her sky. She was a maid in form, but a goddess in stature, pale as the sun-bleached bones of her foes. The portrait had been replicated countless times, sent to duchies of the blood across Soudaime, a reminder of she to whom they had sworn fealty eternal. The Empress was an infamous recluse. This was the only version that most of her subjects would ever know. And beneath his portrait sat the Empress herself, at least the version Jean-Francois knew. She was not the towering figure he had painted on the canvas. In reality, Margot was slight in stature, even short, a fool might remark. She was not a buxom youth, nor a perfect blonde beauty. No maid had Margot been when she became, but a woman of middle age. And now, carved of white marble and black majesty though she was, still she bore the marks of a mortal life hard lived, years unkind, preserved in the forever tale of her flesh. But that was the beauty of it for an artiste like the Marquis, and his path to Margot's favour. Because there was no mirror, nor glass, nor pool of moonlit water that would cast a vampire's reflection back to them. And the years since the Empress had seen her own face in anything save the portraits Jean-Francois flattered her with were nigh uncountable. Margot was so old, she couldn't even remember what she looked like. The Empress of Wolves and Men fixed Jean-Francois with eyes as black as heaven. Her shadow stretched out before her, caressing his own, and though not a breath of wind moved in the chamber, the Marquis felt his curls stir in a chill breeze. Her clawed hand stroked the closest wolf, a vicious old dame named Malice, and the Empress spoke with a voice that seemed to come from the air all around him. "Thou art well, Marquis?"
"Perfectly, Your Grace, merci."
The Empress's lips curled gently. Another wolf, a sleek beauty named Valor, growled as she spoke again.
"Come ye closer, child."
Jean-Francois ascended the dais and knelt at his Empress's feet. Even sitting above him, Margot was almost smaller than he, and yet her presence dwarfed his completely. The shadows lengthened, and she raised her hand so swift it seemed not to move, but blink from her lap to his cheek. Jean-Francois' belly thrilled as Margot lifted his chin so he might look upon her. It had been 50 years, and he still remembered her murderous passion the night she'd killed him. The dark joy in her eyes as he'd risen from the bloody floor of his studio, aghast with horror and wonder that she'd not destroyed him but gifted him a life undreamed of.
"Thou art injured still.
Scream for me."
"A trifle, Your Grace." "6 nights and this trifle lingers."
"Yet slowly heals. I assure you, Mother, it is unworthy of your attentions."
The Empress smiled.
"Who am I, my son?"
"You are rightful sovereign of this empire," he replied, voice rich with pride. "Conqueror and sage and soothsayer, ancien of the Kith and priori of the Blood Chastain."
"Think thee, then, I am unable to judge what is and is not worthy of my attentions."
The Empress's tone was gentle, fingertips brushing his wounded throat. Vampires could not choose which of their victims were granted the gift, and most ended up rotting for days before they turned, arising as that vile breed known as foul bloods. Jean-Francois was the last high-blooded vampire Margot had ever created, and he knew many in the Empress's court whispered that she indulged her youngest. But as Margot pressed harder, as he felt just a hint of the monstrous strength inside her, a chill trickled down his spine.
"I apologize, Your Grace. It is not for me to say what should not concern you."
"Sayst thou this should concern me?"
"I say nothing, Your Grace."
A thumb strong enough to crush marble ran gently over his larynx. The chill deepened, shadows bending, screaming.
"Of what use be a historian who doth not speak?"
"Mother, I..."
A soft chuckle rang in the chamber, sharp fangs glittering as the dark fell still.
"I sport with thee, love."
Margot cupped his cheek, black eyes gleaming.
"Thou art so boyish ofttimes, so young. I would warn thee to wear such weakness if it did not make me adore thee all the more. And adore thee I do, my beauty, with all a mother's heart."
Her smile fell from her lips like dead leaves.
"But thou dost reek of the sheep ye rot with, Jean-Francois. Back now."
The third wolf, an elderly dame named Prudence, watched as the Marquis retreated, head low. Jean-Francois kept his face a mask to hide the storm within. Ardour, shame, fear, devotion. His mother always set him off balance, always left him feeling such a... The Empress glanced to the boy beside her. The page had remained motionless all this time, that brass-trimmed tome upon his palms. Though the boy had a thrall's strength,
His arms still must have burned with the agony of holding it. That was the point, Jean-François supposed. He knew the Empress did not approve of the way he spent his nights. Gifting him this display of casual cruelty was her reminder of what he was, what they were. The wolf frets not for the ills of the worm.
"I have perused thy chronicle," she said. "Does it please her grace? Thy artistry is wondrous as ever. Yet I found the tale somewhat incomplete."
"It is a work in progress, your grace." Jean-François felt a chill breeze, and his empress simply disappeared. One moment, she sat upon a throne, and the next, that throne sat empty. Brushing his hair back from his face, he saw her now standing at one of the tall windows looking to the north.
"They run blind, who run quick," Margot murmured. "Impatience was the end of the forever king, and no intent have I to follow pretty Fabienne into hell."
Margot turned pitch-black eyes to her child.
"But matters grow. Pressed, my love. You speak of the Iron Maiden and the spider."
Margot's lips twisted into what a fool might call a smile.
"They are actually coming here,"
Jean-François breathed, walking to her side.
"Aye, and word have we upon the winds that the dragon approaches o'er the oceans, our invitation clutched in his beggar's hand. They shall arrive before the feast of Dame's Day. The priorem of three bloodlines, vos, Ilon, Divoc, all here within the week."
Jean-François looked out on the mountains in wonder. Small figures in black steel roamed the battlements below, firepots blazing like stars upon impregnable walls.
"And you intend to grant them courtesy?" "'Twould hardly be polite to refuse, given 'twas I who proposed this convocation."
"Such a gathering has not occurred once in hundreds of years. We have waged shadow war with the other priorem since time immemorial. How can we trust them?" The Empress actually chuckled at that.
"We cannot, sweet Marquis. But their desire for self-preservation, this can we trust. These wars have bled this land dry, my child. And every petty fiefdom carved by upstart bloodlords, every mouthful gnawed by rampaging packs of mongrel foul-bloods, the closer we all stumble toward catastrophe. Kestrel knows this. Karim knows this. In the Dragon knows this."
Margot shook her head, lip curling.
"But in drawn here willingly, they shall ne'er bend the knee. We require advantage to achieve that end, and e'en now it lies screaming in the hole where ye left it."
Jean-François clenched his jaw. "He is dangerous, mother."
"Of course he be. How think ye he hath survived the world this cold otherwise?"
Margot's fingers caressed the hurt beneath his cravat, gentle as whispers.
"Yet they are the key, my son. This riddle, this weapon, this grail, they alone have the keeping of its fate. De Lion loathes our kind, mother. He has told us nothing Why? Suppose ye I set thee this task?"
He frowned, befuddled.
"I am your historian. There is no one in your Because thou art young, Jean-François, young enough to recall what it is to be a man. There be potency in that. Comfort and comradeship a clever wolf might turn to advantage."
Margot waved to the history in the thrall boy's hand.
Upon those pages is the tale of a man whose cup overflows with rage and grief, but above all, pride. Protest he may, but doubt it not, Gabriel de Lyon hath desire for the world to know his story. Such is the profound depth of his vanity, and the key to his undoing.
Margot's black gaze flickered to Jean-Francois' throat.
And he feels a kinship with thee, sweet Marquis. The murder of his famille, his bond with Dieu la chance. Think ye so intimate his confessions would have been to me?
Intimate? Jean-Francois' jaw clenched.
He tried to murder my... Thou hast taken thy sport, she snapped. Time hath come to swallow wounded pride, little one, and gift the kindness that the wise proffer after cruelty.
The Marquis shivered, chill crawling his spine as she caressed his cheek.
"'Tis only thee to whom I would vouchsafe this task, Jean-Francois. Not in thy siblings, nor cousins, nor in any other within our court do I place such faith. Of all the horrors I have wrought, dost thou not see it is only thee I trust, thee I adore?"
Margot tilted her head, searching Jean-Francois' eyes.
Oui, he whispered.
Behind him, on the dais, the fourth of the Empress's wolves, a hulking brute named Fealty, licked his dripping jowls. Margot moved without moving at all, in one blinking, touching his cheek, the next holding out her hand. And upon her upturned palm lay a glass phial, filled with blood-red dust and a heavy iron key.
Bring me what I need, child. Bring me an empire.
Jean-Francois bowed, murmuring,
As it please you.